This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday on 1080 The Fan.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app. Download the app, make the Fan your favorite station, and enable push notifications for the latest on the Ducks, Beavers, Blazers, and your favorite shows.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back in hour number two. Football Friday here on The Fan. Dirt and Sprague with you. Hope you're enjoying your Friday. Kick it off a little D&C, 6 to 9. Little CC, 9 to noon. No?
Oh, it took me a sec to... Yeah. I see what you did there.
Yeah, it fell flat. It's okay.
Yeah, that's... D&C. Mm. What is he talking about?
Yeah.
Is that an acronym for something? No. Oh, okay. Just radio show. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. You know, two radio shows before us.
Gotcha, yeah.
Yeah, a little primetime actors.
Sound like a, I think that's like a dental company, isn't it?
What?
Isn't it like DS? Isn't it like a DS dental?
You're thinking DDS.
Oh, it's a DDS. That's right. Back in the day, we used to have that. Yeah. We were the DDS dental show.
Yeah, people used to text that all the time. DDS.
Dental show.
All right. We got a lot to get to. We'll get to some NBA stuff, too. There's there was a report out about the Blazers that may not make you feel encouraged.
I was happy, man. I made money off them last night.
I think a lot of people did.
Wait, why are they favored in this game?
I didn't understand that either. And then also, our buddy Kendrick Perkins, who was on the show yesterday.
Dude, I was so pissed that this happened last night and not right before we had him on the show.
Or at least the day before so we could talk about it.
Exactly.
He went at Kevin Durant. Well, he didn't really go at Kevin Durant. He talked about Kevin Durant, and it pissed Kevin Durant off. And then Kevin Durant went at him, and then he came back at Kevin Durant.
Yeah, Kevin Durant's back on Twitter.
Whole back and forth thing. So we got some NBA news and nuggets to get to coming up at the bottom of the hour. We're going to talk divisional round playoffs here. We talk Green Bay, Seattle. I want to talk about Minnesota, San Francisco.
Let's do it.
Because you said Seattle, Green Bay is probably the one you're most looking forward to because it's so back and forth in your mind. Minnesota winning in New Orleans, I think, changed people's perceptions or thoughts of them. Mm-hmm. And now they go on the road, and sometimes people like to try to ride the hot hand, the team that's hot, feeling good.
Sure.
Maybe that's Minnesota. Where are we at, Minnesota and San Francisco this weekend?
It's really hard for me to see Minnesota winning this football game. I think the spread is a whole different question. We'll get to that at Sprague in the Line. Some of the numbers are concerning for San Francisco this year when they've been a sizable favorite, which has happened a number of times. But I think Minnesota has what it takes to keep this game close. And the run game and the defense are the two main things that I look at. Dalvin Cook was great last week. Their run defense kind of found themselves. They were middle of the road run defense this season in the NFL. I think about 108 yards per game. Put them somewhere in the 10 to 15 range in the league. But they took it to another level. Kamara's a tough back to stop. New Orleans can run the football well. And they completely eliminated that from the game when they got after Drew Brees. So I think defensively, Minnesota has everything that it takes to keep this game close. And I think San Francisco, with a lot of these guys playing their first playoff game, there's always the unknown. And we've seen it go both ways. You know, 2 years ago, the Rams were that team that was kind of the hot talk of the NFL. Here they come into the playoffs, and they lost their playoff opener to Atlanta at home, who went on to the Super Bowl, and then, or no, maybe the NFC Championship game. And then last year, we saw Kansas City have to play their first play. A lot of guys, Mahomes' first playoffs are here we go, and they smoked the Colts in the divisional round. So we've seen it go either way. I don't like saying that's going to necessarily be a positive or negative. What does have me, the main concern I have here is, one, despite how much I root for the guy and I'd love to see him win, do you trust Kirk Cousins again in the postseason? He did it. It was great to get that monkey off the back. Now it's, okay, can you go do it again? especially considering San Francisco's pass rush. I know that pass rush wasn't as good towards the end of the year as it was at the start of the year, but part of that was the teams that they were playing. And the other part of it, I think, is just wear and tear and being banged up as the year goes on. You gave them a week off.
They also had D Ford out for a while, too. Quan Alexander was missing time.
They're healthy. They had a week off. That matchup terrifies me for Minnesota. I think this game's going to be closer than a lot of people are giving credit for, but it's really hard for me to see Minnesota winning it.
I really like this matchup for San Francisco. I look at what they did against Green Bay, and I know not everything equals the same answer here, but watching Green Bay against Minnesota, for example, at the end, when Minnesota had to win that game and they're fighting for the division and they get smoked by 13, it's a great win for them last weekend. That was awesome. Everybody brought it for them. Their offense played well. Their defense showed out. But Drew Brees is 40 years old. Jimmy G's 28. I also think right now, Kyle Shanahan's as good at play calling as any coach in the NFL, if not the best one.
He's one of the best, man.
He's got a lot of mentors and tutors in his life. This is an interesting one. I was reading a piece about how this is kind of a mini family reunion. So Gary Kubiak worked with Mike Shanahan. They developed that power run game in Denver, helped him win two Super Bowls. Well, Gary Kubiak went to Houston, and then Gary Kubiak hired Mike's son, Kyle, to be his OC in Houston. Kyle worked for Gary for a season or two, then went to Washington, and then he became the OC for Washington, and he coached Kirk Cousins. And right now, Mike Shanahan is a special advisor to the Niners. So he like calls in, he video watches the practices, and he'll call down when he has a note for his son, and Kyle will listen to it or say, okay, thank you, but I don't agree with that. Gary Kubiak is also an offensive assistant for Minnesota. So it's a very interesting little dynamic they've got. Jimmy G and Kirk Cousins' stats were like all the same the last 7 to 8 weeks of the year. There's a lot of similarities here. Here's the difference, though. As good as Griffin and Hunter are for Minnesota and getting to the quarterback, I think San Francisco potentially getting Quan Alexander back, even though he had that pectoral muscle pull in midway, and D Ford, along with a guy like Bosa and Buckner and Armstead, I think it's going to be too much. I think their defensive line is going to overwhelm Minnesota's offensive line, which is good but not great.
Yeah, we saw them. I mean, go back to that Green Bay game in week 16, whatever it was. They got dominated.
And even with the inexperience part, I think it's going to be very simple. You have experience in the postseason. You just have far more inexperienced guys. But I think the Richard Shermans, the Joe Staleys, those individuals, even Jimmy G, I mean, he didn't play. But being in New England on the sidelines during a run, you do learn something from that. You know what that atmosphere is like, right? It's going to be different when he plays, but I just think they've got the right leaders within the locker room to say, all right, I know a lot of you guys haven't been in this situation, but we just go out there and we execute. We play our style. We're going to win this game. I think this is a really good matchup for San Francisco.
Well, a couple more stats that show you how similar these two teams are as well. I thought these were interesting. ESPN does a good breakdown of all these kind of things to look for and metrics and stats to know and all that kind of stuff. The two teams tied for fifth in sacks in the NFL this year with 48. Well, both of them were in the bottom 10 in blitz percentage. So basically, they're both great at getting to the quarterback without having to blitz, which is a big deal in helping you in pass coverage and just getting after the QB. And both quarterbacks tremendously struggled when under pressure this year. Jimmy Garoppolo, his passer rating was just shy of 65%. Kirk Cousins was 61%. So they really struggled under pressure, which is something to keep an eye on throughout the course of the game. And the other one is where both of them excelled the most is when they're in play action. When they're on play action, Garoppolo had an NFL best 1,600 or just shy of 1,700 passing yards this season. And Cousins led the NFL in touchdowns off of play action with 13. So they both struggle under pressure and they both excel under play action, and both defenses and fronts can get after the quarterback without having a blitz, which is going to make life difficult for the quarterbacks on each side. I think the guy who's under the most pressure this weekend is undoubtedly Jimmy Garoppolo, because San Francisco is a team. We just saw a metric on the TV on ESPN. They're doing an NFL Live thing. They are, according to Vegas, the most likely Super Bowl team in both matchups. Everybody's pegging them to win the NFC now that New Orleans is kind of out of the picture. Nobody trusts Green Bay to a certain extent. A lot of people doubt Seattle. And Minnesota is a touchdown plus underdog in this game.
Yeah, it's a big number.
San Francisco is the overwhelming favorite right now in the NFC. And I don't really have a lot of questions about that football team. I think they're great defensively. We know it. You mentioned it. They're getting healthy. They're great up front. Sherman's had a really good year this year in the back end. Kittle's back and healthy, which takes that offense to another level. Deebo Samuel is absolutely established
Emmanuel
himself.
Sanders,
Sanders, yeah. Right, as a slot guy, you know, a veteran on that offense. I don't have many questions at all about San Francisco's team. The only one I do is Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
That's it. And he's not had a bad year. I'm not saying Jimmy Garoppolo is a bad quarterback. There's just a different level of pressure when you get to this moment and all the eyes are on you and you are playing a good defensive team that maybe at times is going to take the run away. You're playing a defensive team that I just mentioned is tied for San Francisco and sacks this year, and they don't have to blitz to do it. So they can get after you a little bit. And I think a lot of eyeballs are going to be on him, because if Garoppolo comes out and plays well, it's going to be one of those kind of statement performances and make people wonder, how do you beat this team? Because they're so good defensively. And if you pair the head coach and the quarterback with that, it looks like an unstoppable force.
Well, and I know they had a game against Arizona late where Arizona was kind of hanging around. But look at what they were able to do this year. I mean, Carolina, in the midst of Carolina playing good football, right? I know it was very brief, but they were playing good football. Got their ass handed to them by San Francisco. Green Bay comes to town, destroyed. Right. They took care of Seattle on the road. That's never an easy place to play. They hadn't beaten Seattle in quite some time, let alone winning in Seattle is difficult enough for that franchise in the last 5 or 6 years.
They won at New Orleans.
They beat New Orleans in New Orleans. You look at what they've done. They played Baltimore down to the wire. That was a great football game. Mm-hmm. You look at San Francisco and their big matchups this year, and there's maybe a loss or two in there, but for the most part, they handled their business. And they hung around, or they beat really good teams. I thought the New Orleans and Baltimore games particularly, and Seattle too at the end of the year, those three to me were the most eye-opening of them. 2-1 in that stretch, but everything on the line in that last game in week 17, and they won. Even if it was by an inch, they won.
Yeah.
And they go into New Orleans, hostile environment, everything riding on the line at that point too of seeding and being the best team in the NFC and having home field, and they won that game. And then the game in Baltimore, rainy, ugly, sloppy. But damn, man, they showed up. They played a great football game, and they just couldn't get that one key stop. Lamar made some good plays.
Yeah, it came down to a field goal.
And it came down to the end there, and Justin Tucker won it. So I think they're pretty battle-tested for the season. I see what you mean with Jimmy G. I don't know if he quite has as much pressure as Kirk or still, even with that win. How quickly is it going to change on him if he plays a terrible game and they lose?
Oh, sure. I see. And even with Kirk Cousins, even if he wins this game, the narrative's not going to go away.
It's probably not going to be what Jimmy G's will be.
He's making $28 million a year. Everybody has their mind made up on him. And if he loses this weekend, he's expected to lose this weekend.
I love the matchup for San Francisco, but I could be way off on this.
Well, and I think for Garoppolo, too, you mentioned he played great at New Orleans late in the season. And that week 17 game, I know the numbers don't jump off the page, but he played really well.
He threw some good balls in that game.
He completed 80% of his passes, came up with big throws. Every time it felt like Seattle was getting back into that game, he put together a drive or a couple plays here or there. But then again, kind of going back to the Green Bay thing we were just talking about, of that one game that sticks out in your mind a little bit, when they were on, you know, kind of playing prime time. I know they had a couple of Monday night games early on in the season, but that Seattle game when they lost, that ended their undefeated start to the season, that one sticks out in my mind to me. He completed 50% of his passes and probably should have thrown like 7 interceptions in that game.
Look, quarterbacks need to overcome situations. Maybe he will have it, maybe he won't. Do remember, though, no Kittle and no Sanders in that football game.
Didn't have either guy. There's no doubt about it. And he was much better as the year went on. That was one of those big pressure situation games that it just... He looked a little rattled, and he settled in as the year went on. And I think you're asking, are you going to get that Garoppolo, or do you get the Garoppolo that completed 82% of his passes in week 17 against Seattle?
All right, we'll continue on the playoff trend, and then we'll go into the NBA a little bit, maybe some college football coming up as well. But up next, is there any listener out there right now? I need some honesty here. Fan text line, does anybody want to see Houston win? I think they might be the most universally rooted against team in the postseason if you're not a Houston fan. I don't want to see them win whatsoever. I have no interest in them advancing. I love Deshaun Watson, but that's really about it for me. Let's talk about that one. And then Tennessee-Baltimore, some numbers that might pop out about Tennessee maybe pulling off an upset. That's next on The Fan.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
All right, we'll get to some NBA news and notes coming up. One maybe not encouraging about Portland. By the way, remember that big win against Toronto? That already seems like a month ago. One game against a beat-up Timberwolves team who didn't play their best player, and they lose by 20. 2-3 on the road trip, so we'll get to some of that. But we're talking NFL divisional round matchups. Big weekend in the NFL. The one game I almost have no interest in, I'm obviously going to watch all of it.
Yes.
And it seems to be the one game most people are pointing to as the likely blowout is Houston visiting Kansas City. One, I'm a little shocked of just how overwhelming it is because Houston did win in Kansas City this season. And people are just acting like these are miles apart of team and roster. But I also have no want or desire to see Houston advance here. I don't hate the Houston Texans. I really don't. I love Deshaun Watson, but not a big Bill O'Brien fan. I get quite of annoyed that every single camera shot has to be on J.J. Watt. And
well, and hopefully that was an ESPN thing.
Well, we'll
and
find
this
out.
This game's not on ESPN, I don't believe, this week.
Is anybody rooting for Houston to win?
Anybody? I mean, if you're a Texans fan, you probably are. But outside of that,
I don't know if you are. Doesn't if they win, I mean, that's 100% O'Brien is not getting fired, right?
Yeah, can you fire him now after you won a playoff game?
I hope so.
I mean, I
would
go
get a real GM.
I would hope so too, but we don't know who the owner of the team is. They don't really have a GM. Like, that is a weird situation behind the scenes. I don't even know who's calling the shots right now. We were talking about that the other day. Like, you got a couple of kids that are fighting for custody almost of the team. Like, it's a weird situation. So I don't know if they're firing him either way. They might have if they lost to Buffalo the way it looked like it was going early, but they came back and won that game. Kansas City is so fun to watch. Patrick Mahomes is so fun to watch. And Andy Reid, to me, has always been a likable figure that if I don't have a dog in the race, I pull for him. I want Andy Reid to have a championship before it's all said and done. He's had a tremendous career as the head coach, and he's come so close so many times, including last year, that if Dee Ford lines up on sides, they're going to the Super Bowl, and we might be talking about Mahomes going for back-to-back right now, potentially, if that one play doesn't happen. So we get to this point in the year in the AFC. Lamar Jackson has been a great story, but I think Kansas City has been the more overlooked team late in the season. So my rooting interest is clear in this, not to mention my gambling interest, and I've already placed my bet for this game.
Oh, did you go point spread or money line?
I went point spread on it.
You're going big.
I bought it down just a hair because the 10 was a little scary to me, but I'm all over Kansas City in this game. I don't trust Houston as far as I can throw them.
Did you go half point down?
Half point, yeah. I took him a 9.5.
Yeah. I mean, for all the Houston naysayers out there, I haven't heard a whole lot of Kansas City stuff. It feels like it's Seattle, Green Bay, because they're so close in terms of how people view them. And then Kirk's Jimmy G. And then even Baltimore's got Lamar, who's going to be the MVP this year. And Tennessee had that monster upset. It feels like nobody's talking about that game, Houston, Kansas City. And everybody's discounting Houston, and then they're not talking about Patrick Mahomes being in the divisional round yet again.
Right, and I, you know, a listener texted in a thought on Deshaun Watson. I agree with it. I love watching Deshaun Watson play, and I think last week that was on an example late in the game. Him just scrambling around. He's a tremendous athlete, and he is a ton of fun to watch. But that doesn't give it enough to me to actually enjoy Houston playing.
I want to see the best teams. That's always my goal. And no matter what sport, I want to see the best teams, the most talent. Houston is Deshaun Watson or nothing.
Right?
Like, they got great players. Will Fuller, DeAndre Hopkins. They've got some good ones. But that game was all Deshaun Watson. And as much as I love Deshaun Watson, I'd rather see more complete teams that will compete from start to finish and be close versus the team that trails by a ton and their quarterback goes crazy trying to have the comeback. I'm not interested in a one-man band is what I'm saying. As much as I love Deshaun Watson's of the world or the Russell Wilson's, I'm more interested in the teams that are more complete because I want to see the two best teams take on each other and not watch, hey, Deshaun Watson won two playoff games. Yeah, his defense sucked and right. His offense largely was inconsistent for most of the game, but somehow he did it by himself. It's a great story. I just want to see the more complete teams.
Yeah. Well, Will Fuller, I think, should be back this weekend. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was a hamstring or what it was, but he had to miss last week. Game time decision there. But also, as far as the Texans, they have been one of the most disappointing teams this year, I think, from a just performance standard. Yes, they are 10-6. The way they closed out the year, though, was not good at all. They almost lost to the Buccaneers. Thank Jameis Winston probably throwing four picks in that one. They got crushed by the Ravens when they played them towards the back end.
They got smoked by Denver. Remember that game? They were down by like 30 at Denver.
Yeah, the final of that was 38-24. They barely eked out a win against the Colts. They beat the Patriots, which at this point, is that even a good win now that how they looked against the Titans? So the Texans all year to me have been inconsistent and just underwhelming. This should not be a 10-6 team to me.
No, and that to me is an example of poor coaching.
Yeah,
because you show it in some weeks and then you disappear for stretches of the season. You can smoke New England at home on Sunday Night Football and look great doing it. You can you do what we've been mentioning, go into Kansas City and get a win. Kansas City was 12-4 this year. That was a big time win for them. And then you can have games when you're down 31-3 on the road at Denver and you're just like, wait, what?
That was literally right after the Patriots game, too.
I think it was. And, yeah. I remember that kill at parlay because I just took them on the money line. It was a big time. They were a big time favorite. I'm like, I'm not touching that, but they're going to beat Denver because Denver sucks. And I took Houston on the money line and they lost that game. But if you do want a trend to keep an eye on, if you want this game to be close, Deshaun Watson in his career is 13-4 against the spread as an underdog.
Yeah, there
he's
he is.
He's 10-8 outright as an underdog. In 39 career NFL starts, Watson has only lost by double digits three times, including once as an underdog. And one of those was this year in that game. And actually, two of those were this year, right? Because they lost to Denver by double digits, and they lost to Baltimore by double digits. So it's happened twice this year. So I guess that trend is going in the opposite direction. But he plays very well as an underdog. And to come full circle on this segment, I am terrified of a Tennessee-Houston AFC title game.
Oh, boy.
Please, God, don't. Don't do that to me.
Tennessee-Houston would feel
don't
like...
Don't do that to me.
That would probably go up there as number one... Two teams that clearly aren't the two best in their conference somehow getting to that point.
Like, how did this happen? A listener texted in saying, I hope it's Houston, Tennessee, so they can move it to a Thursday night Color Rush game. Dude, that is Color Rush written all over it. Nobody wants to see that in the AFC title game.
Well, what about the other AFC game? You gave a good number on Mike Vrabel's number as an underdog. I mentioned Dean Pease, who's the DC for Tennessee and how he coached against Greg Roman in that Super Bowl of Baltimore and San Francisco.
He was the Ravens DC from 2012 to 2017.
Yes, he was. He's a really good DC, but are we maybe sleeping on Tennessee a little too much? I know Baltimore's getting that love because the MVP and the way that their season went. But
well, I mean, they won, what, 12 straight games to close out the season?
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
That's going to carry some weight. This is the ultimate something's got to give game. Baltimore covered 9 of their last 10 games. They were a machine, unstoppable. So that speaks for itself. But Mike Vrabel is 7-1 against the spread and 6-2 outright as an underdog of at least 4 points.
There you go.
Tennessee plays very well as an underdog. Baltimore's been rolling. It's the ultimate something's got to give game. We talked about this after the show yesterday, and I think we ended it with one thing because we were kind of going back and forth with some folks in the office. Where are we gambling? Who do we like this week? Which matchups are we picking? And we kind of worked, you know, Derrick Henry's running the ball and Tennessee, the team piece thing, they can play defense. The conversation was ended with one statement, basically. It's Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah.
And I know Ryan Tannehill has had a good season. I know his numbers have been great since taking over for Marcus Mariota. He's taking the offense to another level. I still think the vast majority of that credit belongs on the legs of Derrick Henry, and he was awful last week. He was terrible. They won in spite of him, not because of him. He completed 7 passes for like 70 yards. He threw a bad pick. He fumbled the ball twice. He was bad in that game, but they won because Derrick Henry ran all over New England. And Derrick Henry might run all over Baltimore, but the one thing I know is that Baltimore's offense is far better than New England's this year, and it has been throughout. They're not going to hold Baltimore to 13 points. You're going to have to score to win this game. Do you trust Ryan Tannehill?
All right, we'll get back into these games a little bit later on. Of course, we got Sprague and Line coming up at the bottom of the 2 o'clock hour. So an hour from right now, we'll make our picks. But coming up next, let's dive into some news and notes in the NBA. One that's not encouraging about the Blazers potentially, and a little bit of beef going on because that's what the NBA is all about. That's next. But first, Joe with a sports update.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the Radio.com app.
On 1080 The Fan.
Well, his mind is not for rent.
Oh, we got some sad news in the music world today. Neil Peart passed away, drummer from Rush, primary lyricist.
Ah, do you hear that kick drum in there?
Dare I say?
Oh, no. Are you going to go where you're going?
Best drummer of all time.
Wow.
Sizzler.
Name me a better drummer.
I was going to say, I think a lot of people hold that opinion.
I just, so. Yeah, everybody's tweeting it. I think he's the best drummer of all time.
What's his extra long manhood, Tommy Lee?
I don't think Tommy Lee's, no. It's, okay. No, I wouldn't quite go there.
Oh, hey.
Hey.
I'm not claiming to be Mr. Music Man. I'm just asking. Tommy Lee's pretty famous.
I've seen more videos of his, personal-wise, than I have of Neil Peart. But,
what about Travis Barker?
Barker? No, I don't think so.
A hot little group called Blink 182. Might have heard of them.
Ever heard of them? Ever heard of them? I do like me some Rush, though. That's been all over Twitter today. He was 67 years old. I believe, yeah, 67 years old, and a listener can help me. I haven't pulled up a link yet. I believe he had some form of cancer.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Cancer got him.
So I'm not sure exactly what kind, but sad day in the music business. Maybe the best drummer of all time passing away.
Our cancer deaths went down, though, year over year.
They did. I saw that. I saw that.
The president did it.
He did it, yeah. I did this. Okay. People are texting him best drummer of all time. Thanks. Something happened last night on Twitter.
Is it him?
No, we're getting some other ones named him.
All right.
Something happened last night on Twitter that needs to be talked about. So
something on Twitter was discussed.
This needs to be debated. And Joe Fish, for whatever reason, has hot takes that don't make a lot of sense on this. But we'll get to that in a moment. So this all started with Kendrick Perkins. Now, by the way, friend of the show, Kendrick Perkins.
Best friend of the show.
He texted
me yesterday. Thanks for having him on.
He's our homie now. And I really wish we had him on today.
He didn't really text me.
I know he didn't. But hey, the listeners could have believed it. He tweeted out last night, in about 30 minutes, I'm going to give my opinion on SportsCenter on why I believe that Russell Westbrook is the best player to ever put on an Oklahoma City Thunder jersey. He is Mr. Thunder.
Oh, man, I've just been waiting for Kendrick Perkins' takes all day long. I turn on the TV just dying. Where's Kendrick Perkins? Where can I find his takes?
Kendrick Perkins slept with like Joe's girlfriend
Joe
back in the day.
Joe irrationally hates Kendrick.
I don't
Perkins.
Quite understand it. Like, I get not liking him as a basketball player, but he is just unleashed on his hatred for Kendrick Perkins.
Did you happen to catch him on our show yesterday, yay or nay?
It was Wednesday, by the way.
I did not.
Wasn't it Wednesday or was it yesterday? I think it was Wednesday.
Oh, it was Wednesday.
It was Wednesday.
Sorry, this week flew by.
Yeah.
I found him to be very likable.
I did too. He was very enjoyable. So he sends that tweet out, which, but not a hot take, like, right? Russell Westbrook stuck with OKC. Guys came and went. He signed extensions. He's Mr. Thunder.
I don't think it's a hot take to say he's the best player. You might think KD is a better player, but...
Right. It goes back to the Damian Lillard, Clyde Drexler thing. Clyde Drexler is a better basketball player than Damian Lillard, right? But if you have the debate of who's the best Blazer of all time, who is Mr. Blazer when it's all said and done?
Yeah, it's been Damian Lillard for the last two years.
If he finishes his career here and all that, like, right, he's probably going to go down as the best Blazer of all time. So it's along those kind of lines. So this is, I mean, that's a pretty safe thing. So Kendrick Perkins tweets that out. Somebody responds, he put together the best career, but he's definitely not the best player, yada, yada, yada. Perkins started going back and forth with people. He said, hey, Kevin left the door open and Russ walked right in. Kevin Durant left. You can't be considered the best Thunder or Mr. Thunder. You decided to leave in free agency. That guy then responded, I think Russ walked right into the door called second round of the playoffs three straight times, saying that Russell Westbrook couldn't get to the Western Conference Finals without Kevin Durant. And Perkins simply responded, KD lost in the second round without Russ when I was there. So what does that mean? Because Russell Westbrook got hurt. Kevin Durant couldn't get out of the second round of the playoffs. This then sparked a whole thing. And it started with Kevin Durant chiming in about Kendrick Perkins' averages in that series. Kevin Durant somehow sees this tweet and decides to send it to Kendrick Perkins. Yeah, and our starting center, you averaged a whopping 2-3 during that series. You played hard though, champ, LOL. Basically saying, you're the reason we lost in the second round. Don't put any blame on me. And then Kendrick Perkins, after a little back and forth, went straight for the jugular, tweeting him, boy, stop. You did the weakest move in NBA history, up on a team 3-1 in the Western Conference Finals, and then go join them the following season. Heart of a champion right there.
Not a lie told in that tweet.
And so
KD had a pretty weak response. And that's about it.
He tweeted like a sloth saying you were fat. He said, if our center would have played with production, you should have worked on your skills as much as I did. Perkins said, that's fine. You worked that hard and you still had to go join a 73-9 team. Truth be told, you don't even feel like a real champ. You have a hard time sleeping at night, huh? Knowing that you took the coward's way out.
I guess Rachel Nichols opened up their jump show today. Perkins is on it. And Rachel Nichols opened it up and allowed him to have the floor. He opened it up and basically said, I said what I said.
He had no apology, no regrets.
Well, I love seeing that too, because I wonder how many guys, and we've seen it kind of circulate here and there a little bit, but there haven't been a lot of people that have come out with takes like this, like, dude, like of current NBA players coming out and criticizing. Like, how bad do you think LeBron has wanted to say something like this?
Oh, so many times, so many years.
Right, like, dude, I was like, I just beat that team. We were potentially going to run it back, and you go join, and it sealed my fate in Cleveland. I had to go to L.A. Like,
I mean, the last year that he was in Cleveland, they got swept in the finals with that team that had no business being in the finals.
Right.
He lost, right? Everybody thought he was going to lose. He loses, and everybody that hates LeBron jumps into the, see, still can't win a big game.
Kevin Durant's best player in the league.
3-6 in the finals. It's like, well, did we see who his second best player was? It might have been Jeff Green.
I don't know. Joe has an irrational hatred. I don't know. Where does your hatred stem of Kendrick Perkins? You just don't like him?
He doesn't like role players talking about basketball. Players?
No, that's not it. And his similarity score on Basketball Reference puts him around Scott Pollard, just for reference. Also saw Sam Bowie floating around there. So.
Scott Pollard, a key member of a championship-winning team? Or?
Scott Pollard had a decent little NBA career.
Yeah, he did have a nice career.
He averaged 6-6.
Can we stop crapping on guys that are just role guys in the NBA? 6-6 in the NBA?
That's
I would cry if I had that.
I would take 8-8.
He's serving his purpose.
I'd take 10-10. I would take much more than that.
Wow, just dumping all over these
guys. Not everybody's going to get buckets, bro. They do other things.
Well,
somebody's got to play defense.
Somebody's got to use 6 fouls.
I knew that I had some like past hatred for, and I shouldn't say hatred for God's sakes, for Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah, have hatred.
No. It's just, I think that he was a fake tough guy, that he looked scary and he would intimidate a lot of guys, but not actually do anything. And I found a tweet.
But if nobody messes with you and your reputation is that you are not to be messed with, doesn't that kind of say that you are a tough guy?
Well, this is where I did my research right here, Brandon, because I went and found an old tweet of mine from March of 2018 where I asked the question, has
like
Kendrick...
Year. Like a year and a half ago?
Yes.
I found a tweet from 13 months ago.
Yeah, actually, right. 2 years ago now.
Okay.
Has Kendrick Perkins ever actually fought anyone? I mean, all I can remember is just looking around, looking tough, but never actually doing anything. I then apparently followed that up by watching 10 to 15 minutes on YouTube of Kendrick Perkins, quote unquote, fights, and nothing happens. So I declared him a fake tough guy.
Nobody wanted to step to him.
That's right.
Nobody wanted to step to
him. Nobody wants to chuck nucks with Kendrick Perkins.
I think, what do you think the rough estimate number is of listeners for the show that are great, but do not engage nor have a Twitter account, and they think, I don't need a Twitter account. Durton Sprague always tell me if there was something on Twitter that popped off, and once I find out, I'm good.
We'll always fill you in on what's going on, man. That's what we're here for. I saw this last night. I could not stop laughing.
The 73-9 comment,
it's
true, but we all know that really struck at his heart. Like,
for sure
that
it did.
Crushed KD.
There's a reason he left Golden State. He could have just stuck around Golden State and kept winning and all this stuff. He needed to go do something on his own.
Like, Jay Williams does a lot of things with Kevin Durant's media company. Like, he does that boardroom show. So he's kind of slanting a little towards KD. He does say he's not, but it's like, dude, you work with KD. He did a video yesterday where he talked about how a lot of people advocate for Kevin Durant to not be on Twitter for mental health reasons. Like, dude, you're too engaged in this stuff. And he goes, how do we know it doesn't help his mental health if he does engage with random fans and former players?
Uh-huh.
And I thought, okay, Jason Williams, coworker of Kevin Durant, fair point. When I went to Vietnam for 19 days, I did not use my phone outside of checking a box score for 5 minutes in the morning.
How was your mental health?
Couldn't have been better.
Yeah.
I didn't care about what was going on in anybody's world. I had no jealousy of missing anything. I didn't have anybody tweeting me like, hey, you suck. You're not good at what you do. Life was easy. I woke up, I had a coconut juice, I rode a scooter, and I went to the beach. Life was a lot better without social media.
Not a care in the world, man. You know what I was thinking about the other day, and I brought this up, I think, before or after the show. How much? And I haven't even ingested that much NBA yet. It just because the Blazers season, I've been roped into the NFL, like other stuff. I think I'm waiting to start getting those primetime Saturday night games, better Thursday night matchups, that kind of stuff. But even just from the here and there NBA that I have consumed so far, it has been so enjoyable to not have Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant in the headlines every day.
Well, Kyrie's still kind of in him because of the shoulder thing, but
sure,
I see
but
what
he's
you're,
out of sight, out
saying.
Of mind because he's hurt. So yeah. he's not constantly being debated. And it's just, is he hurt? You know, how long is he going to be out? That kind of stuff. Kevin Durant's only in the headlines when he does something like this and he logs on to Twitter. It's just, it's enjoyable. Yeah. Like, you don't have them bitching. Like, remember how many times we talked about Kevin Durant last year and him being all snippy at a press conference?
He's
after
always
the game,
complaining about
always,
something.
My life sucks and everybody's mean to me and Kyrie Irving doesn't like it in Boston. It's like, I was so tired of those storylines. I'm glad they're both out of sight, out of mind this year.
Yeah. You know, the thing about that is I've enjoyed both of those guys having a year out. As much as I like watching them play, and I hope they never get injured again, I see your point there. And then even with the Warriors. Look, Warrior fan, you had a great run, and you might be right back in the thick of it next year, and you might land Giannis.
You're going to get the number one pick.
Right.
You're going to be just fine.
You're going to be okay. I have enjoyed not having them be in it, too.
For sure.
Because the arrogance of, like, Draymond Green acting like he's a God's gift to the NBA, and he's the reason that they win,
year.
It's nice to watch him be humbled.
Yeah.
Hey, Draymond, why don't you go out there now with a bunch of scrubs like everybody else in the league and tell me how well you win.
He's still an all-star this year.
No.
So there you go. Kendrick Perkins and Kevin Durant got into it on Twitter. And hopefully we do that through radio.com. So they have a bunch of NBA insiders and we kind of have a thing set up with them where we're going to get one every Wednesday. I believe
I'm going to aim to try to make it Kendrick next week because I do want to talk about
well,
this.
Well, if he's listening, he might not want to come on anymore after me. I heard that joke.
We'll
guy.
Make sure no. you're not here.
Yeah. Joe's not going to be here that day.
I'm sure if he calls in, I'll be like, oh, hey, Kendrick.
Oh, yeah, you'll go total
nice
soft.
To have you, buddy.
Yeah, you'll go total
nice.
Soft.
Just tell him you're more of a Steven Adams guy.
Yeah.
Hail the pit.
So hopefully we'll get him next week. But he was fun to talk to this week, and he took a shot at Kevin Durant last night that we appreciated. Okay, I still want to get to, speaking of somebody being very sensitive, there's another athlete out there that this needs to be discussed. I know it's not on the forefront of people's minds, but we still need to talk about it. We'll get to that coming up in the final hour. We have offensive coordinator news in the Northwest, one that is hired, one that is visiting. We'll get to that. We got to spread the line at 2:30, so get your fake sponsors in at 55305. Coming up next, Brian Windhorst had something to say about the Blazers that was interesting. We'll get to that crunch time next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, where their trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time. I was not there today. I needed a day off. My legs are too sore.
Yeah, I ain't having that. You got me? I ain't having that.
You know what, Mario? I'll be there tomorrow, all right?
Is it Mario or Marshall?
We have not even talked about that
we
yet.
Haven't
today.
We haven't dove into Bill Walton wearing an Oregon helmet with no microphone.
Do you guys like peanut butter?
While feeding Mario Cristobal's child peanut butter out of the jar with his fingers. And then watching Mario Cristobal, he smiled and handled it well on TV.
You knew he was.
He was pissed.
Livid.
He was pissed because Pash was like, I wouldn't let him have that. Bill's been eating with his finger. And Bill puts his huge ass finger in the jar in front of him, starts eating it. Cristobal's kid gets it on his finger. And then you could tell Cristobal's like, oh, God, why would you do that? And then he like smiles. He's trying to wipe it off. He's like, your mom's going to kill me.
We have not even talked about that yet.
That was a great game. And Pash, by the way, I hadn't heard of Walton Pash game. It seemed like Pash is kind of starting to hate Bill Walton.
That's kind of their shtick at this point.
Yeah, I know. But like, it seemed a little more aggressive than usual last night. It was like, if you paid attention, I wouldn't have to tell you this.
It started when Walton pulled out the glockenspiel at the game against Cal like years ago. It was
a glockenspiel.
He has a kid from the Cal band come over and he's playing the glockenspiel on air in Pash. You can hear it. There's still a game going on, Bill.
Yeah, Bill, pay attention. I think one of my favorite lines of the night last night was when the game, I think, was tied to start the second half. It was like 38-38, somewhere in that range. And Bill Walton says, Arizona's blown this game.
Oh, yeah.
They've blown their
Oregon
chance.
Oregon got a bucket to tie
right.
it. And he goes, Arizona's lost this game.
Pash is like, it's tied with 19 minutes to go. What are you talking about? They were in control early. They've blown their chance here. That happened last night.
Mario or Marshall?
Marshall or Mario? He just told you it was Mario. His name's Mario after the dad. Yeah, I'm named after my dad, too. You know, I actually walk back my stance a little bit. I get people that hate Bill Walton. He's not everybody's cup of tea. Totally understand it. I tend to really enjoy him just because I find college basketball from time to time unwatchable.
It was 36-36 at the right? half. Like, I mean, that kind of tells you all you need to know.
At times, it's an unwatchable product. So if you're giving me a game and I want to watch it or I don't want to watch it and Bill Walton's on the call and it's like, all right, I'll have a beer and listen to what Bill Walton wants to rant about tonight. Maybe it's peanut butters. Maybe it's volcanoes. I don't know. I find that entertaining.
Yeah.
Where I do completely walk back, though, is when you have a top 25 matchup that's actually a really pivotal game for both teams coming down to the wire into overtime. You draw the line a little bit there.
Yeah.
I even found myself like distracted last night, like paying attention to Bill Walton. The next thing I know, I look up and there's like a minute and 20 seconds left and it's a 2-point game. I'm like, well, that's a really good game, but I've been paying attention to Bill Walton jamming his fingers in peanut butter for the last 20 minutes.
Yeah. You kind of zone out like you're watching, but you're kind of zoning out specifically listening to what he is saying.
Right.
And
right.
Most of what he's saying isn't actually beneficial to the game itself. It's just his ramblings and thoughts on all things life.
He doesn't provide any context to anything that's actually happening on the court.
On the flip side, still would take that play-by-play call over what OSU had against ASU yesterday on ESPNU.
That wasn't a very good, I know. I flipped over to that bad boy after the Duck game, and it was...
That felt like they picked two people outside of Gill, and they said, hey, do you want to call the game, or we got nobody?
And boom goes the dynamite.
Like that? Run over like that? I want those guys calling the game now.
Oh, dear Lord. All right, I do actually want to talk about that. I'm glad you brought it up, but I teased the Brian Windhorst thing. I just want to get to it here briefly. He proclaimed, was this on The Jump or was it on a podcast?
I think it's on the ESPN podcast he does.
Okay, well,
it's like a Hoop Collective podcast.
Okay, and Brian Winters has been on the show a number of times. He's connected in the NBA. We always are interested to hear what he has to say. The Portland got brought up, and a lot of people have their eyes on Portland coming into the deadline. We've talked about that a lot this week, what they're going to do. And everybody seems to be of the opinion that they're going to be trying to unload those expiring contracts. You know, Bazemore, what did Bazemore go, 0 for 8 last night? Or 0 for 7.
That sounds about right.
Sweet Jesus, that was bad. And then Hassan Whiteside, who's nearly making $30 million. They want to get rid of those expiring deals, potentially for some other piece. Windhorst has a different take, though. He says he's hearing that Portland could be quiet at the deadline.
Yeah, you know, he's ranting about the message right now in the circles of the NBA is that Portland is currently totally good with what they have, and they'll wait for Nurkic to come back before they evaluate what they do further. And this isn't my take. I've seen this, but I totally buy it. I think it's more that's going around because nobody wants their assets. Like Bazemore and Whiteside might be expiring, so maybe somebody will take them by the deadline. But right now, I think that's going around because they're not finding a trade partner.
It's all about it. You just have to find a team that's looking to unload a salary. That's the only reason a trade makes sense for anybody. Like if you're Cleveland, and maybe they think they can get, and I don't.
You want to offload,
right?
And you want to start over.
Kevin Love's making $30 million over the next 3 years. Do you want to pay that? Or you swap him for Hassan Whiteside and you got $30 million coming off your books.
The problem with this, though, is if this ends up staying as is, if they lose Whiteside or Bazemore or both for nothing, that is going to be one of the more unforgivable things that Neil Olshey's ever done as the general manager of this team. And it's also going to be a representation of a gross miscalculation of assets by him, because he traded for Bazemore from Atlanta, shipped Evan Turner out. You could say you hated Evan Turner all you want, but a lot of those pieces that worked for them last year worked for a reason. And you ship him out, you bring it in, everybody's ecstatic about it. Then you ship out Myers Leonard and Mo Harkless in a four-team deal, and you get back a Hassan Whiteside because you have no depth at center. I understood the moves when they made them, but now this is what your season's turned into, and nobody potentially wants your assets. If they don't trade either one of those guys and they just lose them in the summer, we need to have a real conversation about how he choked away the 2016 summer, how he has failed to give the proper talent around Damian Lillard, and how this step goes even further of acquiring two assets and then maybe miscalculating how valuable they really would be on the market. And then you go into the summer, you lose them, you have about $17 or $18 million in cap space,
And then fingers crossed that we finally land somebody that we're after.
Yeah.
That's kind of what you're at.
Yeah. I'm going to read a couple thoughts on that. We're against it here because somebody had an interesting thought at the fan text line 55305. That's how you can interact with us. I want to read that. And I think that's an interesting point on Portland and what they're going to do in the coming month, because when they made those trades, I remember both of us clearly saying we liked them, which has proven to be wrong. We liked the addition of Bazemore.
Bazemore, I couldn't have been more wrong.
I mean, defensively, he's been okay, but sweet Jesus, that guy doesn't have an offensive game to save his life.
Not on this team.
Not on this team, at least. And I think the one saving grace, though, that we both mentioned, and this is kind of the way I felt about it all year, is at least if it doesn't work, you have two massive expiring contracts, which should carry value in the NBA. That you can offload and turn into something else. I want to read a thought on that. We'll talk a little bit more about that. We got some funny Bill Walton stories coming in. We'll read some of those. Also, I have a question for Oregon State fan, not to bring up a soft spot, but how are we feeling today?
In basketball?
Yeah.
Yeah, we could talk about that too.
Because that was kind of, I'm trying to be into college hoops this year. I watch Oregon, Arizona. It's a good game. Ugly. I don't know how Oregon won, but they won. It's like, all right, that came out of the wire. I'm kind of in the mood.
I was thinking to say, I was like, I didn't know. How did Oregon win that game? But
made
they
no
did.
Sense. Pritchard didn't play that well, but then he hit some big buckets leg. Didn't make a lot of sense. They win. So I'm kind of in that mood last night. And I flip on over ESPN. Oh, here we go. Let's go. Beavs at home. Looks like a good atmosphere at Gill. What the hell happened, man? So we'll get to that. Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Their trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time. Locally owned and operated with 6 locations to serve you. I'll be there tomorrow morning. We'll get to those coming up in the final hour. Ducks and Beavers, College Hoops, Bill Walton stories, some thoughts on the Blazers continued. We have some fun with audio from a Family Feud. Where is this from? Canada? Is that where it's from? Family Feud Canada of maybe
it's
the
Family
worst,
Feud Canada.
Maybe the worst answer of all time. So we'll get to that.
But you can't really blame her. I think you can defend her a little bit on it. We'll play the clip and we'll see what people think.
Okay, and then we'll spring the line coming up at 2:30, so get your fake sponsors in 55305. Load a final hour on a Friday. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.